How do you build a high-performance team? That's the question that all leaders grapple with. The challenge in today's environment is that you're told to pull this off on a shoestring budget and that you have to exceed previous year's production. It's an impossible task. Here's how this show helps. Every week, we're going to feature executive and senior leaders from HR, IT, and sales, and they're going to share their best practices and playbooks so you can empower your managers to build great teams. We are Engaging Leadership, and now, here's the show.
How do you go about balancing culture and strategy in schools? Are leaders born or made? Today's episode is going to deal with some of these big questions. So welcome to the Engaging Leadership Show, where we talk about how to grow leaders and drive impact for your people. My name is Chitung, or CT, and I'm co-founder of Engage Rocket. We're a leadership listening and insights tool to help school district leaders use and improve teacher retention, engagement, and student achievement outcomes. Today's guest has been the Association of California School Administrators Region 10 Superintendent of the Year and the ACSA State of California HR Administrator of the Year. It's a great privilege to be interviewing Dr. Sean Tenenbaum, Superintendent of San Benito High School District. Dr. Tenenbaum, welcome.
It's an honor to be with you, CT.
So Sean, tell me a little bit more about San Benito High School District. What is it that makes it special to you?
It's probably the number one question. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about culture and strategy, which I think are extremely important ingredients for success and leadership development. And I really think San Benito High School District embodies just such a rich culture. It's 128 years of tradition and legacy and generational development. It is a culture built on tradition and family engagement and generations of families that have gone through the school and the district, and everybody is so connected. They feel a part of it. It's vibrant. It's alive. There's stories from the 1940s and 50s that still live today. And I think by having that vibrancy and that culture and almost a passed down lineage, people remember the past. They remember the roots. They celebrate the roots of the district and the school and what it means to everybody. But also they're embracing the future. They're embracing innovation and creativity and technology and what we can do differently to really drive success for our students. So I think there's that really interesting balance. And that's what I attribute to the success and really what I would call the heartbeat of the district.
So it's steeped in tradition, but at the same time, looking forward into the future. That's really exciting. You've spent quite some time in the district since 1998, if my research serves me well. And you've grown your career through that. This is a bit of a trick question. Are leaders born or made? And in our conversations, it certainly sounded like you had those leadership qualities in you from pretty early on that caused someone to tap you on the shoulder. What do you think was that initial spark that caused you to become self-aware that, hey, maybe I have some of this leadership juice going on and take this opportunity?
When we really think back, I do believe that human beings are born with certain traits and characteristics. They start to develop over a period of time. From an early age, you can really see students in school, on an athletic team, or with a club, that they start to lead by example. Maybe they're learning how to work and organize a group of their peers and colleagues. From an early age, for myself, it was athletics, being a part of different athletic teams, being a part of great coaches that really demonstrated fantastic and wonderful leadership qualities, but also just outstanding teachers on how to be a role model in a classroom. And it came naturally. I think I had incredible role models, whether it was playing football or baseball or basketball early on from my coaches, but also outstanding teachers that really helped put me in a position to continue to develop leadership. Sometimes that would be with a presentation or a group activity, but I just found myself in these really interesting positions with great people. And those great people help propel the future leaders of tomorrow. They give them an opportunity to succeed. And then when you fail, which is a good thing, we learn from failure, there's a support mechanism and a support network to help you get back on your feet, to rise again as a leader. And I think those opportunities were provided early on for me, for all aspiring leaders. How do we create that safe space where young people can take a risk, they can lead by example or lead a group of people, and maybe they don't succeed at first, but we encourage them to keep trying.
There are many myths about leaders, and I want to touch on this straight away because you sound like you could be an extrovert. Were you an extrovert when you were younger?
Yes, I was an extrovert. I was an only child. To make friends or to be part of an athletic team or in a classroom or even in the neighborhood, I had to go out of my way to build those relationships. But I do not think that leadership is solely for an extrovert. I do not believe that. For myself, it was something where I was a child, and when I was at young age, going out and building relationships, I had to do that. I think that pattern helped develop and form who I am and a lot of my leadership capabilities. But I have been around some fantastic leaders who are not as extrovert, who may be a little bit more of an introvert or a little bit more subdued in their outgoing personality. I think leadership is defined by many different characteristics.
You touched on something that I've recently come across in the literature quite a bit, where you alluded to the fact that you need to give leaders space to fail, particularly early on. Amy Edmondson from Harvard University, she recently wrote a book about failure and how that should be embraced. Do you think that you can be a good leader if you just haven't failed?
Oh, wow. Leaders tend to take risks. Some are more calculated than others. Not every risk or every action is going to result in a positive dividend, right? It's not going to always have the optimal outcome. I think that there's different levels of failure or success, but I think the leaders I have been involved with and I have been privileged to work with, almost all of them, if not all, at some point in their career, took a calculated risk, didn't succeed. And you learn so much from that. So I would say most leaders, if not all, probably have exhibited that sense of failure at one point. And it's great reflection. If we think about human nature, we're constantly looking forward. We're constantly looking back, hopefully to help us move forward in a positive light. That reflection really sets the tone for future development.
It reminds me of what a leadership coach that I respect once told me. You want to look for failure before installing a leader because you want to see evidence of them showing that resilience, showing that ability to bounce back from a difficult situation. The way that they described those people, that they've had stellar education, they've gone to Ivy League universities, they've come out and their careers have just been amazing. And he described them as being brittle. Like they've never tasted failure. And the fear is that the moment they do, it's going to be hard to come back from it. It certainly resonates for me in my experience. Like the best leaders that I've spoken with, there was a dark time in their careers at some point that they had to come back from. And that made them amazing leaders. Going back to your story, think back to the first time that you took on a people management or people leadership role. How long ago was that? And how was that transition like for you?
From early on being a captain of an athletic team to being a group leader for projects in school, from the time I was preteen to teenage years into college, playing football at the university level and being a leader within the business school that I was a part of, the fraternity I belonged to at the time. Those experiences really helped shape and provided opportunities for me. But really, I look back on probably the most pivotal part of my career was having my first classroom, being able to really work with students at a comprehensive level, and then coaching my first team as a young adult, working with young athletes. So those two experiences in my early 20s really helped shape and mold who I am. But also, I can tell you, CT, there was probably more failure than success at that time of, hey, I can't do that again. Oh my gosh, the students didn't respond, or we didn't play well, or the kids didn't perform well on an exam, or they really didn't understand the material I taught. And those failures and the ability to reflect and adapt have been with me for 32 years in my career now.
Is there one episode that stands out particularly for you?
Early on, it was, how do I connect with students? How do you connect with them on a relational level and deliver material and content that they can understand? There was a lot of good relationship building, but I wasn't an expert in my delivery of content. And I had to really mold that. Then over a period of time, maybe 3 to 4 or 5 years in, I was still building relationships at a strong level and I was delivering content at a high level. I think I really learned how to balance both of those. But I don't remember one particular episode or situation.
No problem. Now you're a superintendent of the district and you're leading adults, intelligent, experienced. Do you see any similarities between your leadership in those early days?
There are more similarities than differences. If we really boil it down, adults, much like students or children, they want to be cared for, they want support, they want to know that somebody is going to provide the resources, whether it be professional development for an adult learner. A student wants to make sure they have a safe classroom. They want to make sure they have a trusted adult that they can connect with and communicate with. That's no different than an adult, and especially a leader. There are two things that I've really developed over my career. One is providing leadership capabilities for others to grow in earned autonomy, allowing them to earn their autonomy as a leader, to develop the space, the freedom within a set parameters and or boundaries to grow. And then the second is to make sure that all of the leaders that we're working with are collaborative in nature, both vertically and horizontally in the organization. Those principles have really guided me and been my foundation as a superintendent. I must provide them with the space to grow, but also encourage them to collaborate with their peers and their colleagues so that we have synergy and symmetry and consistency throughout the school district.
So let's talk more about how that applies right now in the workplace. We've been conditioned in society to want more. More seems always better. I want that promotion. I want more responsibility and so on. Whereas you get that a little bit as kids, but not as much. And so that leadership alignment that you're talking about, both vertically and horizontally, a little bit harder to do for adults. The first concept that you talked about, that earned autonomy, makes a lot of sense because we respond better to things that we've earned and we value them more. So when we actually get that autonomy, we feel like we've grown and we're willing to invest more effort to get to the next level. Talk more about how do you drive that level of alignment horizontally and vertically. Maybe for adults, it's easier vertically because we're a hierarchical species. It's relatively easy for humans to, in most cases, except the authority. But with peers, that's where it gets tricky.
Oh, I completely agree with you. Imagine, if you will, trying to align horizontally. You have a classroom teacher. One may have been in the school district for 30 years. The other may be a brand new teacher, first year. They're colleagues, but their levels of understanding and experiential learning are much different. As a leader in a school district, you're nurturing the development of maybe, in some cases, 4 to 5 different generations. We have folks in their early 20s all the way to their late 60s. Those generations are much different in their philosophical approaches, their belief in leadership, their belief in society and how they were raised and their own belief as adults. But you have to be able to create a safe space where colleagues horizontally can come together with a set foundation of parameters of how to operate and what is expected of them. And then you let them start to work through that so that it becomes their own identity. I think one of the things that is critical for school district leadership is we have to balance the autonomy with the expectations of what we need as a school district to ensure all students are learning. When you talk about the secret recipe for horizontal integration and horizontal alignment, it's really allowing colleagues who are extremely passionate about student learning and very well educated to work within a set of parameters that is flexible and fluid enough to create their own identity, and then they can drive themselves forward. As a leader, you're constantly supporting that growth and development. How can we reflect to get better? And it's a very cyclical process. You're constantly revisiting success and failure to help move forward.
Wow, it's been a great conversation so far. Make sure you join the HR Impact Community, where we gather a community of HR leaders just like you. This is a space where top people leaders share actionable insights and practical playbooks. Sign up today as a member for the community. Get updates on the latest HR resources and exclusive event invites. You can join the community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. And now, back to the show.
Who sets these parameters? Do you do that as a leader, or do you get everyone in the room and say, hey, let's brainstorm, work this out?
You have a superintendent who is working with the school board to set overarching goals for the district. Those overarching goals provide an umbrella for all schools, all principals, all of the students, staff members, parents, so that everybody understands what we're striving to achieve. But at the school level, each principal is largely in charge of setting the tone and driving success forward. So they may have a set foundation of parameters and or a structure that they want their teachers and colleagues to work through on a weekly, monthly, annual basis. It's creating that flexibility so that the group of teachers who may be working together in mathematics, and let's say they're all algebra teachers, they have flexibility and enough fluidity to drive their success because they're the front line working directly with students. The principal is guiding, supporting, nurturing, monitoring, and coaching, whereas that group of teachers who horizontally are aligned are working together to reflect and go through that cycle. It's a real formative cycle. You're in the process and you're continuing to develop as you go.
And let's put some concrete examples around that. If, say you've just gone through and you've cleared with the school board the 5-year strategic plan for the district. Now you're going to drive that vertical alignment down. How do you start doing that?
We start with the development to make sure that people who are part of the process feel valued, they feel validated, they feel heard. So when we're developing goals and our objectives for the school district, I start with my executive cabinet. We talk about where we are. We discuss what we had previously. If we're on point, are we in alignment? And then I present to the school board themselves a set of draft goals. And so they have a foundation to start with. We look at where we were last year. We reflect on our progress from last year. And sometimes we may not alter a goal. We may be still striving to attain it. But to get to the point of how do we drive that vertical integration and alignment, it starts with the executive cabinet. Then we filter down to our upper leadership and our upper management group. We're sharing those same goals to the middle management. As we're going down, it's like a cascading effect. Each role within the organization is going to have an opportunity to understand, to digest, to share feedback and commentary, but also how they fit into the ecosystem of the school district. My role is important because I play a huge part in this particular aspect. So we cascade down, and then probably the key that we've had a lot of success with recently is creating feedback loops to make sure that as we're progressing through the school year, we're still on point, but we're also capturing maybe we're deviating a little bit too far in one way or another. And those feedback loops provide us with an opportunity to hear from the field and the classroom what is and what isn't working.
You mentioned these feedback loops. In the old way of doing things, we would set the plan, 5 years strategic plan, year one, we're going to do this. Everyone gets excited when the year starts. And then at the end of the year, oh, where do we go?
We have broken down the entire staff of the district. Each leadership position, whether it be a principal, assistant superintendent, a director, could be an assistant principal, or a supervisor, a classified position. We all have set questions that we've developed in concert with our leadership team. And then we do what's called rounding. And rounding is a one-to-one conversation with a set group of employees. Usually it's 10, 12 minutes, maybe 15. You and I might meet, and then I might meet with a custodian. Then I might meet with an English teacher. I might meet with a bus driver, a food service employee. And then we take all of the feedback, we synthesize the information, we capture it all, and then we code it and theme it to find out, on this particular question, how did our staff members respond? Are we on point? What are the challenges? What feedback do they have for us? Are we progressing in the right direction? And then after we synthesize everything, we reshare what we learned after meeting with 150 to 200 people in a letter format. The next quarter, we do the same thing. We might have a couple of different questions. We also give a status update on things we're working on that we learned. Overall, two times a year, we've been surveying all of our staff members on departmental performance to make sure that not only are we doing the individual one-to-one, but we're getting anonymous feedback from all staff members. And then we correlate the two, and it's been giving us tremendous results.
I love that. That's so powerful because you're giving everyone a voice. And you mentioned you're doing this quarterly. Is that right? Wow.
Correct.
A real amount of dedication and commitment to the process. And the fact that you're sharing those insights back and making progress along the way, I think it's a very powerful message to staff that you're walking the talk. It's not like a tick the box exercise that you're doing. They're fully invested and fully involved in that strategic plan, and they can see the impact of their feedback and their voice.
We don't do it in isolation. We have a fantastic partner in Studer Education. Studer is a leader on the national level. We work with a partner who provides coaching to myself and our upper management. So we're refining our own practices to make sure that we are serving our people better and better. And part of it is really this feedback-driven system. Are we hearing the right messages? Are we truly listening? And how are we gathering that feedback? So what hasn't been done in isolation, Studer Education has been an incredible, tremendous partner. My hat's off to them.
How do you weave this into building up new leaders within the system? Do they get trained on how to take this feedback, how to conduct this feedback themselves?
That's part of it. New leaders to the system, we've created an onboarding process. So we have both the technical and we have the relational. They have to be able to be technically sound of how to do their new job or perform their new role. That's part of the onboarding. We've had some success with our 30, 60, and 90-day onboarding plan. We're looking at the technical components, as I mentioned, but also how are they building cultural competency? How are they building relationships? That has been extremely important as we're developing new leaders. Along the way, we're providing support through mentors. We're providing support through open opportunities for them to dialogue and treating them as professionals. They may be new to us, or they may be young, or they may be somebody who is career changing or transitioning, but they still have value. So we want to provide those same opportunities.
With all of this in place and with your experience in the school district, how do you think the impact on students has evolved over the last 20 odd years as the quality of leadership and the leadership bench?
It's probably no different than any good organization when we look at the stability and the vibrancy of a good team and the importance of leadership and the importance of the leadership team as a component. I think over time, we have really refined and developed our skill set. Value the importance of leadership, the importance of having stability in a school district, continuity, consistency. We may philosophically disagree on a particular aspect, but how we do that and how we value the person and the professional, creating that stability and that continuity, it sets a tone. It's no different than home. When mom and dad are in alignment, usually the children are in alignment, they feel that. And for a school district or a school system to function well, when your leadership team is stable, they work well together, they are open, they listen well, they're receptive, that trickles down to student performance every time. Students know and they feel when there's instability in an ecosystem, when educators aren't happy or unhappy, when their teachers not in a good mood, for example. I think that the value of leadership and of the leadership team on impacting student success, it's absolutely mission critical.
What's one piece of advice that you have for people in education who might be aspiring towards leadership or thinking about it? If you have a short piece of advice for them to think about, what would that be?
Listen well, listen often, provide opportunities to gather feedback. For every one time that you succeed, continue to strive forward, even when you may not realize success. Failure is a great teacher. Taking risks or having that risk-taking personality, I think it's critical for the development of a young leader. If we really stop and think about it, CT, we play a finite role in a child's life. Yet we have this unique opportunity to help shape, mold, and develop them into the person they're going to be for a lifetime. Taking a risk, being vulnerable to listen, getting student feedback on how we can support them better. I think those are some great ingredients for a young leader.
That's incredible. Thank you so much, Sean. We touched on so many things today in terms of how you cascade strategy through culture in schools, how you create or help leaders to grow within your particular culture. It's disproportionately impactful in each student's growth journey as well. If anyone listening wanted to continue this conversation with you, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Oh, thank you for asking, CT. And it's been an honor to be with you. Really fun topic. Yeah, anybody that would like to contact me, they can reach out on the website for the school district, heybaylor.org. My contact information is there. And I look forward to connecting with you, CT, and whatever I can do to help you and the organization.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Dr. Tenenbaum, for being with us and sharing your journey. This has been the Engaging Leadership Show.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Engaging Leadership. We hope you liked the conversation. Don't forget to continue supporting us by joining the HR Impact community. You can find our community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. Tune in next time where we'll have another leader joining us and sharing with us the game-changing insights that help them build high-performing teams.